Howard Thurman's The Search for Common Ground, Chapter 1, Concerning the Search. An old man with a double-bit axe is the caretaker at the Gore place. The cattle, except a few wild horns, died in that fire. The horses graze high up on the dark hill. Nobody ever comes to the infamous house. The pain, the hate, and the love have left no ghosts. Old men and gray hawks need solitude. Here it is deep and wide. Winter and summer, the old man says, rain and the drought. Peace creeps out of war, war out of peace. The stars rise and they set. The clouds go north and again they go south. Why does God hunt in circles? Has God lost something? Is it possible God's self? In the darkness between the stars, did God lose God's self and become godless and seeks God's self? Does God exist? No doubt of that, the old man says. The cells of my old camel of a body, because they feel each other and are fitted together, through nerves and blood feel each other, all the little animals. Are the one man, there is not an atom in all the universes. But feels every other atom, gravitation, electromagnetism, light, heat, and other. Flamings, the nerves, and the night's black flesh, flow them together, the stars, the winds of the people, one energy. One existence, one music, one organism, one life, one God, starfire and rock strength, the sea's cold flow, and man's dark soul. Not a tribal nor an anthropoid God, not a ridiculous projection of human fears, needs, dreams, justice, and love lust. A conscious God? The question has no importance, but I am conscious. Where else did this consciousness come from? Nobody that I know of ever poured grain from an empty sack. And who, I would say, but God and a conscious one, ended the chief war makers with their war so humorously, such accurate timing, and such appropriate ends? A poem from Robertson Jeffers. There is something so private and personal about an act of thought that the individual may very easily seem to be a private island on a boundless human sea. To experience oneself is to enter into a solitary world that is one's unique possession and that can never be completely and utterly shared. Here is the paradox. A man is always threatened in his very ground by a sense of isolation, by feeling cut off from his fellows. Yet he can never separate himself from his fellows, for mutual interdependence is characteristic of all life. The need to care for and the need to be cared for is another expression of the same basic idea. It is unnecessary to resort to moral or religious authority for a mandate or for an injunction. Such needs are organic, whatever may be their psychological or spiritual derivatives. Therefore, whenever the individual is cut off from the private and personal nourishment from other individuals or from particular individuals, the result is a wasting away, a starvation, a failure of his life to be sustained and nourished. Studies show that some 50 years ago, when an effort was made to track down the cause of the death of more than half of the children who died during the first years of their life, it was found to be due to a disease known as marasmus. This disease was also known as infantile atrophy or debility, coming from the Greek word marasmos, meaning wasting away. The discovery was made that such babies were not neglected as far as their physical care, cleanliness, and the like were concerned. Rather, what was lacking was the free and easy access of the child to psychic nourishment made possible through mother love. Perhaps it is largely for this reason that hospitals today keep the infant for as short a period as possible. When the real mother is not available, mother love substitutes are provided. I have heard of an instance in which a mother's heartbeat was put on a tape and the sound amplified through the public address system in the hospital nursery for the benefit of all the babies. The human spirit cannot abide the enforced loneliness of isolation. We literally feed on each other where this nourishment is not available. The human spirit and the human body both sicken and die. It is not an overstatement that the purpose of all the arrangements and conventions that make up the formal and informal agreements under which men live in society is to nourish one another with one another. The safeguards by which individuals or groups of men establish the boundaries of intimate and collective belonging are meant ultimately to guarantee self-nourishment. All of these are but social expressions of the underlying experience of life with itself. Life feeds on life. Life is nourished by life. It is life's experience with itself that establishes the ground for the dogma that life is eternal. To seek nourishment is a built-in urge, an ingredient of life in its most simplest or most complex manifestations. The creative push that expresses itself in this way is the manner by which life realizes itself. The descriptive term that characterizes such behavior is actualizing potential. Wherever life is observed, this is the primary activity or business. In this sense, all life is engaged in goal seeking. The degree to which the potential in any expression of life is actualized marks the extent to which an expression of life experiences wholeness, integration, community. The clue to community can be found in the inner creative activity of living substances. The more highly developed the organism, the more pronounced seems to be the manifestation of the clue. Cells and organisms always show certain characteristics of direction, persistence, and adaptability in their efforts to realize themselves, to round themselves out, to fulfill themselves, to become, to ripen in integration, in fine, to experience community. The more highly developed the organism, the more plainly manifest are these characteristics. It is reasonable to say, then, that the intent of creation is that life lives by constantly seeking to realize itself and establish forms, patterns, and units. Expressed in this way, it must not be thought that life is static, something that is set, fixed, or determined. The key word to remember always is potential, that which has not yet come to pass, but which is always coming to pass. It is only the potential, the undisclosed, the unfinished, that has a future. It is difficult to think of life apart from the notion of potential. Indeed, they seem synonymous. To be sure, life is not finished yet. Creation is still going on, not only in the spinning of new worlds, systems, nebulae, and galaxies, and the infinitude of space, not only in the invisible world where chemical elements are born and nourished to support conglomerates of matter, yet to appear at some far-off moment in time, but also in the human body, which is still evolving, in the mind, which so slowly loosens its corporal bonds, and in the human spirit, which forever drives to know the truth of itself and of its fellows. In human society, the experience of community, or realized potential, is rooted in life itself, because the intuitive human urge for community reflects a characteristic of all life. In the total panorama of the external world of nature, there seems to be a pattern of structural dependability and continuity, or what may be called an inner logic, that manifests itself in forms, organizational schemes, and in a wide variety of time-space arrangements. The most striking pattern of all is that there seems to be an affinity between the human mind and all external forms, a fact that makes an understanding of the world possible for the mind. The religious basis for such an interpretation of community is the affirmation, which to me is categorical, that the mind of God realizes itself in time, and that there are observable patterns or sequences in all creation. Thus, God is thought of as creator. From this point of view, all time-space manifestations of substance, in short, all things, even existence itself, are regarded as the mind of God coming to itself in time and space. This is evident in history and in nature. Existence itself is construed as divine activity. There seems to be a principle of rationality in all existence. and the significance of this can be found in the order of life. True, what seems to be a principle of rationality is expressed in observable order in life may be a limitation of mind itself. Yet it is this assumption of inherent logic in the functioning of the mind that makes comprehension of the external world possible. I recognize the fact that in using the formal name creator, I am using anthropomorphic terminology. I do this quite deliberately because I find it quite impossible to think of action, and this is implicit in the term as an abstraction. While it is true that when the mind is concerned with something as vast as existence itself, any kind of limitation is paradoxical, if not contradictory. Nevertheless, the mind as a thinking entity can only make sense of this complexity by using symbols that can stand for ideas and fields of comprehension. Beyond the thisness and thatness of experience and observation, one has to sense something more. Whatever term is used to express this dimension, also a limiting word, simply extends to the boundary. It does not get rid of it. One may use the term ground or infinitude, or to borrow from a phrase from Northrop, the undifferentiated aesthetic continuum, or Eckhart's nameless nothing or Godhead, as he distinguishes it from God, or contemporary theologians' term, God above God. All these phrases are an attempt to escape the dilemma of pure existence that to the mind is meaningless. The man who seeks community within his own spirit, who searches for it in his experience with the literal facts of the external world, who makes this his formal intent as he seeks to bring order out of the chaos of his collective life, is not going against life, but will be sustained and supported by life. And for the world of modern man, this is crucial. In the conflicts between man and man, between group and group, between nation and nation, the loneliness of the seeker for community is sometimes unendurable. The radical tension between good and evil, as man sees it and feels it, does not have the last word about the meaning of life and the nature of existence. There is a spirit in man and in the world working always against the thing that destroys and lays waste. Always he must know that the contradictions of life are not final or ultimate. He must distinguish between failure and a many-sided awareness so that he will not mistake conformity for harmony and uniformity for synthesis. He will know that for all men to be alike is the death of life in man, and yet perceive the harmony that transcends all diversities and in which diversity finds its richness and significance. The order in creation and the orderly disorder that seems to characterize what is regarded as random activity in certain aspects of world external to man, the concepts in the mind that are derivatives of man's experience with the senses, and those other concepts that seem to take their own form from the boundless ebb and flow of the imageless tides that wash shores of the human mind and spirit, all of these express an authentic creativity that is mind at work, and man is an essential part of the order. What is observed as a structure of orderliness or dependability in any and all expressions of life, from the simplest forms to the most complex, is seen most dramatically in the ability for man to create and conceptualize, to plan, to function purposefully, and to implement in time and space what is idea or thought to the mind. From within the narrow circle of man's mind, there can be no thought or action that is not involved in some form of intent. Intent as a form of volition, focused or unfocused, deliberate or unconscious. The man's experience with life, within him at all levels and about him in varied manifestations and time-space intervals, he is a part of the world of facts and meaning, suggesting creative intent. It seems reasonable, then, to assume that wherever life is found, evidence of creative intent must also exist in that which is being experienced, reacted to, observed, or studied. One such sign, and the most crucial one, is the way life seeks always to realize itself in wholeness, harmony, and integration within the potential that characterizes the particular expression of life. The most natural question that comes to mind, therefore, whenever men reflect upon or try to rationalize their experience of life is, how did life get started? What was the beginning of it all?